Welcome to Reach For It Radio Show with your host, Christina Winslow. This program offers entertainment, inspiration, and fun as we feature practical tools to help you achieve what is actually possible. Learn new ways to reach for the stars and attain what you really want out of life. You just might find it is easier than you think. And now, your host, Christina Winslow.
Welcome, everyone. Today we have a really special guest. I'm excited about this show because, as you guys know, I'm all about energy work. And this wonderful woman, Julie Motz, is joining us today. And she is best known for her energy work during heart transplant surgery with Dr. Oz. When I heard about that, I was just so excited. I did not know that Dr. Oz even had this kind of thing with his surgeries. And so when I found out about Julie and her book that is called Hands of Life, I just had to have her on the show. So in 1994, Julie Motz pioneered the practice of doing energy healing in the operating room while patients were having surgery. Her book about this work, Hands of Life, has been published in 5 languages and is used worldwide to help people get through surgery with reduced complications and speedier recovery time. She has been featured in the New York Times Magazine, Psychology Today, and on CNN. She now works with a wide range of physical and emotional issues, including depression, anxiety, and addiction. She is all about healing, and today's show is about radical healing with Julie Motz and her website. If you're interested in her products and her workshops and training, check it out. It's at juliemotz.com. Julie, welcome to the show.
Okay, and I just want to say my last name because people sometimes think it's like the apple juice. It's M-O-T-Z.
Thanks for bringing that up, Julie. And her website, everyone, is J-U-L-I-E-M-O-T-Z, juliemotz.com. So, Julie, I have been such a student of energy work for so many years, and I'm a little upset I did not know about you until now, because I probably would have been one of your students many years ago. Can you tell us a little bit for the people who... I know you're known worldwide, and I feel a little bit embarrassed that I don't know of your work, but could you tell us a little bit how you got started with the energy work and with Dr. Oz?
Well, there are many wonderful energy healers. I was getting a master's in public health at Columbia University because I thought I would go into healthcare administration and try to bring alternative medicine into healthcare that way. And I thought the best way was to get a graduate degree. I actually already had a graduate degree in fine arts for cinematography because I'd been a filmmaker before that. But I decided to get a master's in public health. I very quickly abandoned this idea. Graduate school was unbearably boring to me. But while I was on the medical sciences campus at Columbia University, a donor came who gave them a grant to set up an alternative medicine study center. And they were a little afraid of spending the money, so they started by sending out a questionnaire throughout to everybody in the medical school, the dental school, the School of Public Health, everybody, all the doctors, all the professors, about their experience with alternative medicine. And a lot of people sent back the forms filled in anonymously because they didn't want anyone to know that they'd been doing yoga or acupuncture or stuff like that. And very shortly after that, we got a call from the cardiothoracic surgery department. I didn't know who it was, but the director of this new research center called and said, someone in cardiothoracic surgery is interested in alternative medicine. I want you to go and check it out for me. And I got very excited because they were a major profit center for the hospital. And I said, this is wonderful. We'll get an exploratory grant. We'll travel all over the world. We'll put Dean Ornish to shame, et cetera, et cetera. So I said, what's the guy's name? Who's the contact person? He said, it's this guy, Mehmet Oz. So I didn't know he, at that time, he was the youngest surgeon on the service. So I just called up and I said, I got very excited. He said, well, actually, we're thinking that if we add these services on, we might be able to charge more. We might be an additional income flow for the department. And they weren't interested in spending any money whatsoever. They were just interested in whether we could bring more money in for them. So my heart sank, and I was sort of trying to graciously get off the phone. And he said, and what do you do? And I said, oh, I'm an energy healer, thinking that that would immediately put him off. But, and I said, and I also, you know, I've written a lot of, you know, scientific articles about alternative medicine. He said, oh, well, why don't you come in and talk to me? So I went up to this meeting, and I'd never been to the sixth floor at the Milstein Pavilion before. I sank into carpets almost up to my knees. There was all this highly polished mahogany wood, indirect lighting, the New Yorker magazine and copies of National Geographic. You know, it was extremely posh, you know, as opposed to most of the rest of the hospital. And I went back, you know, through this sort of maze of offices to this conference room, and there was Dr. Oz, you know, you know what he looks like these days. Imagine 1994, he looked like a cross between a young Clark Gable and Omar Sharif, you know, very charismatic and attractive. And there was a nutritionist there, and a, you know, the one from Standard Casting, overweight and with a bad complexion, a patient advocate, and a guy who was a technician who ran the heart lung machine, who had some interest in this. And so we sat down, and you know, I told him, you know, what I did and my ideas, and he said, I want you to come back with a list of everything in alternative medicine that you think could help my patients. At that time, all Oz knew about was coenzyme Q10. That was about the limit of his knowledge for in alternative medicine. So I came back, and I had this long list, and it said, included where, feed the patients only organic foods. At which point the nutritionist said, well, I think that's ridiculous. I think there should be democracy in food choice, as if a patient ever gets what they even order on a menu. And then, and another thing was, oh, clean the rooms with only organic cleansers. At which point the patient advocate leaned over and said, Julie, if we can just get them to clean the rooms, we'll be ahead of the game. So it was obvious, you know, what I was suggesting was much too extreme. But one thing that interested Mehmet, Dr. Oz, was a recognition of using hypnosis for surgery, because I knew someone who had done a very successful experiment where they prepped people for surgery using hypnosis, making hypnotic suggestions for how the surgery would go. And so, and that had already been so successful at another hospital, they had broken the blind. In other words, you know, there were half the patients were getting a placebo, and it was so successful they stopped and started doing this technique with all the patients. So they decided they were going to do this hypnotherapy, and they decided they would do first-time coronary bypass with no complications. And they were going to set up the experiment. And I said, fine. And then, so I thought my job was done. And he said, and what are you going to do? So I thought, well, what am I going to do? I've just given you my advice, you know. So I could see he expected more of me. So I said, okay, I'll work with your other patients. What have you got? He said, well, we have heart transplants, mechanical heart implants, valve repair. I said, great, I'll do energy healing with them. He said, no, you can't say you're doing energy healing. You know, the people will be in an uproar. I said, okay, Mehmet, I will say I'm doing energy evaluations of your patients, that I'm just going in to check what their energy is like. He said, fine, sounds like a good idea. So I called a couple of friends of mine who were also doing healing work. One was my cousin, another was a dear friend, because the hospital environment is kind of cold and unpleasant, and I didn't want to be there alone. And we developed a technique. Mehmet would go in first, and I would be right behind him, and he would say, this is my colleague, Miss Motz, and she does, and he'd mumble something. He would literally mumble something that I couldn't understand and the patient couldn't understand. And he would say, would that be all right with you? And they'd look up at this tall, good-looking, charismatic guy who had just saved their life or was about to save their life. And they said, oh, yes, Dr. Oz, that would be just fine. And then he would leave with his white coat flapping behind him, and I would summon my two friends to come in, and they would look up in terror and say, what are you going to do to me? And I said, I'm going to touch you and make you feel better. Well, this was wonderful news, because no one had done anything except touch them, but not just touch them, poke them and make them feel worse. So they were very enthusiastic. And I began what in those days was known as energy chelation, but I didn't use the chelation because the doctors thought of vitamin C drips, where you just touched various parts of the body, various energy centers, and got a general sense, and if something seemed off, you would, you know, correct it. And I would ask them if there were specific things that were bothering them. And I had techniques for pain reduction and that I would use, and this was going along very well. And so I would work on people before their surgeries and after their surgeries, and they were very pleased. But I began to get very curious about what was going on inside the operating room. The operating room was like this black box to me. And I just got curious, you know. So I said to Mehmet one day, I said, Mehmet, you know, I would really like to work in surgery and see if my technique could be efficient, could be, you know, useful. And first he said, sure. And then a week later he said, no, you need floor IRB. Now, IRB is institutional review board approval. There's no such thing as institutional review board approval floor by floor in the hospital. He just made it up because he got scared about having me in the operating room. So I just dropped the idea. But he had a favorite patient. He was a guy who was a former Navy SEAL who came in through the emergency room and had to have a mechanical heart implant. And he hadn't slept for 48 hours. And so I was sent to work with this guy in the intensive care unit. And I did some very gentle energy work with him, and he fell asleep immediately and slept for 12 hours, and he was delighted. So I said, you know, George, when your heart comes in, would you like me to be in the operating room with you? He said, I would love that. I said, okay, you talk to Dr. Oz and I'll talk to Dr. Oz and we'll see what we can do. So the next time I saw Mehmet, I said, Mehmet, you know, Mr. So-and-so really wants me to be in surgery with him when he gets his heart transplant. He said, are you sure? Have you talked to the patient? I said, yeah, you go ahead and talk to him. And so apparently George put in a very big pitch. And Mehmet said, yes, you know, you can come in the operating room with me. And that's how it all started.
That's incredible. It took a Navy SEAL not to be afraid of energy work in the surgery room. So I love that. Incredible, Julie. So how many years did you do this work?
I did it for about 3 years. I did a tour at Columbia, and then I got a grant to work with women having surgery for breast cancer out here in the San Francisco Bay Area. And then I did it, you know, after that, just for private patients, people who would just call me up and ask me to come in and work with them. I probably did it for about 5 years intensely. And now I just worked with a patient today preparing him for a pancreatic cancer surgery. So now I still do it occasionally, but it's not the main body of my work.
And so now you certify people, don't you, to do this type of work?
People to do this. And the work essentially involves taking people through the surgery step by step beforehand, telling each part of the body what's going to happen to it and preparing it. For example, surgical patients are given a muscle relaxant, which means the nerves fire, but the muscles don't move. This is terrifying for the body. But if I remind the body that, you know, in the first 3 months after conception, before the motor neurons hooked up to the muscle cells, this is exactly what happened. Nerves fired and muscles didn't move. So you know the state. You can return to the state and just enjoy it. So I try to reassure the body for each place where, as I'm relating the story of the surgery, it seems to panic. I find something soothing and reassuring for it. And then if I go into surgery, I go in and I stand with my hands on, keep my hands on the patient at all times, usually on the head, but if it's brain surgery, I have to stand at the feet. And I talk to the patient, and I talk them through the surgery. I tell them what's happening. If I feel any fear or anxiety on their part, I give them imagery to relax that. And then after the surgery, I ask them, do you want to know what I perceived in the operating room? Sometimes they don't, and sometimes they do. If they do, I tell them what happened. And otherwise, I just work on the surgical sites, on the wound areas, to help them to a speedier recovery, to help the parts of the body come back together again.
That's incredible. I'm curious, when you're in the operating room, do you see their spirit ever leave the body? Or do you see anything that would, that would really, since you're so in tune to energy,
What I feel is what's happening body part by body part. Before I actually went into heart transplant surgery, I went in to observe a bypass surgery. And I saw them excise the veins from the legs that were going to please the heart arteries. I heard the veins screaming in terror. I heard the heart saying, what's happening? What's happening? And I heard the brain saying, nobody told me about this. Nobody told me about this. Nobody told me about this. So what I get is the spirit of the body. Wow. The body speaks to me in surgery. And I talk back to it.
That's incredible because, you know, different healers have different gifts, and to be able to speak to the actual body parts and ease their fear, anxiety, trauma, that is absolutely incredible. I'm so glad I found you, Julie, because I feel like your book is going to be in my library of energy healing books.
Well, you know, you have to understand that when I first went into surgery, I didn't know if what I did was going to be of any use whatsoever. I mean, I knew it had been helpful before surgery and after surgery. I went there. First of all, I wanted to feel what the energy was like in the operating room. I just wanted to feel what it's like with the doctors, with the patients. And of course, I learned that the patients are very conscious under anesthesia. Well, we know already the brain waves are very different from when you're unconscious. But I got how conscious they really were. So first I went in just to see, and then I did what I naturally do. When I saw distress, I addressed it. And then I discovered through that that I could be very powerful from a healing perspective during the surgery itself.
Now, were you ever in the delivery room, or have you been asked to go and help
No,
with that?
No, I haven't. But I have prepared people for cesarean births.
You know,
I work for people who have had cesarean births, both the mother and, you know, people who were born that way afterwards, to repair the shock from that. And what I usually do with that is I will redo the birth as it originally was, because it's very, very shocking. You know, the baby has a whole birth plan for coming out. And usually there's a whole energy exchange in natural childbirth. The mother actually has an orgasm as she gives birth, and all that wonderful energy goes through the baby's body. So the baby has this whole plan. If suddenly there's air on its body and it's yanked out, it's very surprising. It's alarming. So what I will do with patients, excuse me, I have to cough. What I will do is first I'll redo their birth as it was, and I'll let them experience the shock and then all the rage they feel. And then I'll redo it as if it were a vaginal birth, so they can get in their body the delicious, sensual feeling of actually being born that way.
That's incredible, because my second child, I had a C-section. And I'll tell you, Julie, I think even to this day, 9 years later, my body feels like it's still pregnant.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It didn't know that the baby's gone. I don't know. There's just something.
What you can do, Christina, is repeat that process yourself. You can redo it as if it were a vaginal birth and give that your whole reproductive tract that sensation that it was expecting the baby to come through it. You can just do that. You can sort of do a kind of light, put yourself in a light hypnotic trance and just do that and complete that with your body.
You know, think of how many women could do the same thing, Julie, that you just helped. And I will do that. I will go into a meditation and visualize and go back, I guess, no time, no space, right, for the body.
Yeah. And it will on an unconscious level, deepen your bond with this child.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah. That would be wonderful. Well, I have so many questions for you, Julie. And so we have a quick break. When we come back, we're going to speak more with Julie Motz, and she's going to tell us a little bit about her radical healing methods. And there's so much more to come. So stay with us.
I am Sharon Lynn Wyeth, and I have developed a proprietary system that reveals accurate insight into someone's personality traits called Namology Science. This science of unlocking the secrets hidden in a person's name has become so popular that I am offering a Namology Science coaching certification program. Join our international community of certified Namology coaches. Go to knowthename.com for details.
Have you been told you should write a book? Do you need a little help getting started? Or maybe your manuscript is already written and you require some fine-tuning before you publish? Big Country Publishing offers writing coaching packages that are custom-tailored to you. Contact Big Country Publishing today so they can help you to get your book and message out to the world. Learn more at www.bigcountrypublishing.com.
Would you like a tool to clear your energy field and raise your vibration instantly? Solfeggio Sound Healing from Earthly Frequencies is a new CD created to bring you earthly healing vibrations combined with higher dimensional galactic energy. Use this sound healing for meditation, massage therapy, releasing negativity, and astral travel. Solfeggio Sound Healing by Ted Winslow. Now available on iTunes and Amazon.com.
Welcome back, everyone. We're with Julie Motz. She is author of this incredible book, Hands of Life, which is all about what she has done in her work as an energy healer in the operating room with Dr. Oz for heart transplant surgery, and all of the work that you're doing now, Julie, is based, I looked at your website, it really looks like it's focused on teaching what you've learned over the many years to pass this on to others. Can you talk a little bit about your what you offer people? Because I have a feeling that there's a lot of listeners that would love to find out about how they can learn how to do some of these healing methods.
Yeah. Well, my website is juliemotz.com. It's JulieMotz.com. And I offer a number of different workshops. The next one I'm offering in the end of September is one, it's a workshop about how to make surgery a truly healing experience for people. And I teach people, first of all, the basic techniques of preparing people for surgery, of being with them in the operating room and working with them afterwards, but also of interfacing with doctors and with surgeons. I mean, that can be very intimidating for most people. So I teach them how to, with the patient, approach the surgeon. I mean, how to do that, how to gain entry, how to gain somebody's, you know, the trust of the medical establishment. I do that training. I do various other trainings. I have developed a system. I have another website called Four Energies, spelled out FourEnergies.com, FourEnergies.com, in which I discuss a whole system of emotions, emotional energy, and personality types. And I also teach workshops about that, which is very interesting. It's very helpful just working with your patients or working with your partner and anybody. It's a way of viewing human beings from an emotional / energetic perspective and understanding how they operate and understanding how you operate. But over the years, I've taught workshops on depression. I've taught workshops on food issues. I like to attack things that people think are insoluble, that no one else has been able to solve, because, of course, I think that everything can be solved.
So, okay. I really love the energy of spontaneous questions that come up in, you know, with people that I'm interviewing. And this came just popped in. And if it's a little bit off topic, please, I won't be offended. But, you know, a lot of healers out there, Julie, and a lot of people who are in spiritual work, a lot of them, even though they eat organic and they're really conscious of many alternative health, hold on to body weight.
Yeah. Well,
what would you?
Yeah, it's about. I didn't interrupt you. You want to finish the question?
Go ahead. That's okay. I just was curious if you see any correlation. You know, because a lot of people say the ascension process that I'm, you know, gaining 20 pounds, what's going on? Or I'm becoming more spiritual and I'm gaining weight.
Well, I have to really discuss here my ideas about spirituality as well as, you know, weight gain. I was bulimic for 20 years. I know the issues of food and weight very, very well. I think there are people who attempt to become spiritual while bypassing the body and their emotions, and that doesn't work. You actually have to go through your body and through your emotional life to get to spirituality, because spirituality is basically love. I mean, to be spiritual is to be very loving. It's not mystical. It's actually quite simple. And love is of the body. If we don't have bodies, we don't feel love. Emotions are of the body. So to be truly spiritual, you have to be engaged with the body, not move above the body. And my discoveries about food really relate to what happens in the womb. Above all, womb and maybe early feeding and infancy. And that's where most people don't look. But if when you implant in your mother's uterus and she is not freely giving you all the blood you need, you will have food issues. You will be hungry for the rest of your life. There's a very famous study done around what was called the Dutch Hunger Winter. The Dutch Hunger Winter was when the Nazis decided to punish the Dutch for collaborating and hiding Jews by reducing their caloric intake to 900 calories per person, including pregnant women, per day. People who had spent the first 3 months of their gestation, the first 3 months inside their mother's tummy during that winter, were obese, way out of proportion to the rest of the population, as were their children. So it went down for two generations. So starvation in the womb, whether it's emotional starvation or physical starvation, I believe is at the heart of eating disorders and weight gain, and nobody looks there because people are terrified to go back and discover maybe mommy didn't really completely want me. Maybe daddy wasn't completely supporting and loving to her during this pregnancy. Maybe she smoked or drank or took pills. Maybe she was highly stressed. You know, maybe somehow I was deprived in the womb, which would mean I would have to get angry at mommy about that experience. And it's just too terrifying for most people, quite frankly, to do that level of investigation to deal with this issue.
That's interesting because, you know, you think back at where your mother was as a woman when she, you know, conceived you, and you're not looking at her as a mom anymore. You're looking at her as, you know, like, you know how you don't look at your parents as human beings in a way, you know, and you have to look at their emotional, mental, physical, spiritual health at that point in time. And let's face it, many years ago, people weren't educated like they are now about.
You know, it doesn't even have to do with education. The truth is that parenting is a very underdeveloped skill, not just throughout the planet, throughout the planet. When we moved from hunter-gatherer societies where women were having children 4 and 5 years apart because of the night breastfeeding to what's called civilization, when they stopped the night breastfeeding, stopped carrying children on their body, and children started popping out 1 and 2 years apart, we never caught up with either the material resources or the emotional resources to take care of children born so close together. And even if you're an only child, your mother or your grandmother was part of a family where children are born too close together. And that, so the parenting of children has never caught up with modern life. And by modern life, I mean when we first started living in walled communities.
That's, you know, did breastfeeding versus bottle feeding have anything to do with your research? Or was it more happened in the womb?
Well, I think it's more what happens in the womb, but the mother who carries a child in a certain way doesn't become a different person when she starts nursing, doesn't become a different person after birth. So there's a carry through, and what happens in both breast and bottle feeding, depending on how the mother feels about it, reinforces whatever happened in the womb.
So obviously this would be, do you give private sessions or is this something you
go through? I do private sessions in person for people who are in California or come to California, and I do phone and Skype sessions for people who don't live in my area.
Well, before we started the interview, I told Julie, I said, I feel like I'm going to receive a healing without even just to be in your presence. You know, when someone is really in tune with energy healing, you can feel it. You can just, and we're doing the interview over, you know, the airwaves and technology. And I'm in Colorado and she's out in San Francisco, I believe.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I can see that even a remote session with you would be life-changing because I can feel your energy, Julie.
Well, some people have been kind enough to say that it has been. So thank you.
So what would you tell women now? Obviously, you know, this is more in-depth work than we can go into on the radio, of course. But if someone was wanting to have a baby or they're pregnant right now and they hear this interview, is there anything that you could give them, a few little tips that they could do?
A couple of things. Morning sickness really reflects your life when your mother was pregnant with you. If you have there's nothing normal about morning sickness. It really reflects what was going on with you when you were inside your mother's uterus. But in general, what I would suggest is this kind of regression healing where go back, redo your own conception, your own gestation. And it would be interesting at each stage of the pregnancy to go back and find out what happened to you in utero at that time and to do work around that and heal that.
Wow, that's incredible. I'm going to have to tell my sister. She's pregnant, so I hope it was okay to say that on air.
And the reason I suggest this is because when you're pregnant, the same hormones go through your body that went through your body when you were inside your mother's womb and she was pregnant with you. It's the same hormones. So there'll be what we call state-dependent memory. It's like smelling a perfume you wore, 10 years ago and bringing everything back, or hearing a song. So those hormones will bring back unconsciously all the memories of what you were like when you were 2 months in utero or 3 months in utero. So rather than have them move through you unconsciously and run your life, you bring them to consciousness and you try to process them.
That's really interesting.
And that way they won't affect the embryo and they won't affect the fetus.
That's really interesting, because I think the women are obviously more in tune to this, as you know, that have the children, but it affects the men just as much, you know.
Men will, each stage the child is at, the man will be unconsciously thrown back to that part of his childhood. One of the reasons men become workaholics when a child is born is they do not want to remember their infancy. They want to be away and not reminded of it.
Interesting. It's not the stress of paying for diapers. It's
desire not to be around the baby and be triggered.
Wow, that's fascinating. So since we only have an hour show, I want to ask you about depression now.
Sure.
Because a lot of people are starting to challenge the medical community, and this is not saying, obviously medication is needed for some. But a lot of people are starting to question, like, am I really depressed? Where does this come from? Do I have to be on, medication for this? And I know you found some causes, some root causes.
Yes, and I suffered from depression for a lot of my life. And actually, I was able to alleviate it temporarily. I would literally say, go into your synapses, produce more serotonin, and hold it there longer. I would just give my body that order.
I love that.
It's nice for a quick pick-me-up. But there are a couple of things around depression. First of all, the instruction of depression is don't move. That's what depression is saying, don't move. If you are inside a woman who really does not want to be pregnant or would rather forget about the pregnancy, every time you move, she sends stress hormones, catecholamines, pouring into the bloodstream. And they affect your ability to grow. So you learn to be very, very still. And sometimes you need to be still at certain times of the day, because that's when mommy would be most upset.
Whoa, that's incredible.
Yeah. But then that didn't solve for me the question of suicidal depression, because this makes depression a life-saving, you stayed still in order to save your life, to keep from upsetting mommy and save your life. And the technique is really to go back in the womb and see how angry you really were at mommy at that time. But in hunter-gatherer societies, let's say you got pregnant and it was like lots of bananas on the trees, lots of rain, lots of food. But by the time you gave birth, there was a drought and there was very little food. What a mother would do is she would bury her child under a pile of leaves and walk on, because nature would want her to reconceive at a time when she could actually take care of the child. Now, if the child were to cry and scream, it would be hard for the mother to abandon the newly born baby. But if the baby is trained to be quiet and not scream, in other words, if the baby gets the message, die because it's better for the species, it's better if mommy conceives at another time, then the baby begins to think it wants to die, because it wants to kind of go with the program, if you see what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And that stays in the body. So if you're born at an inconvenient time for your mother, for your parents, which they may not tell you about, then anytime there's the least bit of distress, you'll go back to this thing of, oh, I better die so that, she can go on and have another child, so that things can be better. Things would be better without me.
That's incredible. I've never heard that, theory.
The person who thought it up, and I haven't written that next book yet.
Oh, I think you're going to have to write that book, Julie, because that could shed a lot of light on people who are suffering.
It came to me because I hate puzzles that have no solutions, and everything they were saying, and people would write these long books about depression and how profound, and they couldn't, on and on and on. And I thought, no, it's just like, mommy didn't want you, or mommy was upset. Go back, do the work. You don't have to be depressed for the rest of your life.
So are people coming to you for multiple sessions in their healing plan? Like, do you go back and say, because I would think that you would have more than one thing that happened in your utero,
yes.
You know?
And also there are layers, because you begin to see, oh, because this happened, I repeated it in my life like this, and I need to address, you need to address all levels and all ages. But I believe that if you don't go all the way back, you don't ever completely heal.
So do you ever find other things, like other issues people have in their life, not just, you know, physical issues, but maybe they always have problems with money or...
Yes. Yeah. It all goes back to, you know, how can I call it NEM. You know, in California, we love what we call TLAs, three-letter acronyms. Well, NEM is not enough mommy.
Okay. So...
Many people, and so you'll have a feeling of deprivation and you'll act that out financially. Or there's another situation. We have in the body what are called imprinted genes, and every species has them. It means that although you get a gene from the mother and the father, only one of those will ever be enacted. And this is true for the whole species. It would be as if you always got eye color from your mother and hair color from your father. You'd get genes from eye color from both, but only one would ever be active. Same for hair color. In utero, the imprinted genes from the father are meant to preserve and promote the infant's health. The imprinted genes from the mother inside are meant to preserve and promote the mother's health. And there has to be a balance between mother's health and infant's health. So that, you know, and that balance is very, very carefully maintained. If the infant lives at the expense of the mother dies, the infant dies anyway. If the mother gets too strong and the infant doesn't get enough, the infant dies. So that that balance in the sense of, you know, walking that line between preserving oneself and preserving what the person you're dependent on really results for a lot of the distortions that then mess up our lives later on. Because there are all kinds of things we have to do to make sure that mommy is okay. Careful limitings of the self that don't serve us well later on.
That's so interesting because you always think the opposite, like the mother's concerned about the fetus. But we don't think about it's the opposite.
Well, it's actually both. It's actually both. But if a mother herself has not been nurtured, she's likely to resent the fetus or not be able to give even what she ideally would like to give, unless she's gone back, dealt with resentment, got angry at her parents, cleared that all out, and then she's completely available.
So pretty much, it sounds like pretty much anything that is blocking you in your life, you can trace it back to in your...
I think it has roots in the womb. Mm-hmm. I believe. Roots in the womb, because there's so many things that just aren't solved and are mysterious. And this is what I like to say. There is no behavior that is pathological or sick if you just find the right age. What you're doing may make no sense for a 33-year-old, but for 3 weeks in utero, it might be exactly what you needed to do.
So what about other things? Like maybe, have you found any correlation with, you know, people who develop diabetes or...
Oh, diabetes.
Heart issues.
We know already that if mothers eat too much sugar during pregnancy, the child can develop diabetes very easily because the pancreas is just overwhelmed. The fetal pancreas is overwhelmed.
And, you know, what would you say, do men have more common things than women, or does it not matter? So...
disease is an equal gender employer, shall we say, an equal opportunity employer, so far as gender is concerned.
Okay, Julie, this is so interesting. I feel like I need an encyclopedia from you where I can look up every issue. And do you offer that kind of information, or is that something you're looking at offering? Because it's almost like you could create a textbook for the energy healers out there to use as a reference guide.
Some of it is on my website. Some things just popped into my head and I wrote about them. But no, I probably will write another book, but I haven't written it. But people do call me up for supervision, like people who will be working with a client and they are stuck and they might call me up and ask me to, you know, they'll present the case to me and I'll tell them. I'll both from what they're saying and I'll also feel into the client's body and get a sense of what they should be doing, where they should be going.
Well, Julie, thank you for sharing this information. We have a quick break. Stay with us. Julie's going to give us some more information on her radical healing techniques, and we will be right back.
When it comes to publishing, there is a difference. At Big Country Publishing, they work with you on a personal level to create a custom publishing package that's tailored to your needs as an author. Their design team and experts in the industry will contribute to you to create the book that you've always dreamed of. Isn't it time to go big? Contact them today at www.bigcountrypublishing.com.
Do you feel stuck? Do you feel empty or lost? Have you tried to clear what's not working from your life and have the same issues coming up over and over? There is hope. A heart and soul healing session can retrieve your soul and heal your heart so you can feel love, joy, peace, and abundance. Contact Claudia McNeely today at www.askclaudia.com and feel better now.
Hello, my name is Ted Winslow. And as a professional singer, songwriter, musician, and audio engineer, I have worked with voice coaching for many years. I created a new CD, Vocalist Scales and Intervals, for my clients who are looking for an easy and affordable way to improve the quality of their voice. So, if you're in broadcasting, public speaking, or in the music industry, you'll benefit from the voice exercises. Just load it into your MP3 player and you're ready to go. Vocalist Scales and Intervals by Ted Winslow is now available on iTunes, Amazon, and BigCountryPublishing.com.
Thanks for joining us today. We're so glad you're with us, Julie, and we hope the audience is having as much fun as I am. I'm learning all kinds of information, and I have a lot of homework to do. I'm going to have to go read your book and also check out your website for more information, because I do, it resonates very strongly with me, the work that you do. And I can see how it can be of value to anyone, because we all suffer from different things in our adult life, and we try all of these methods to treat the symptom, but not the root cause. And that's what you're all about in your radical healing.
Absolutely. Radical, the real meaning of radical is back to the root. And I say I go down to the cell and back to the womb.
So I have to wonder, is that, have you documented the recovery rates speeding up, and did you guys put together any medical papers or studies with the work you've done?
No, they weren't at that time, because at that point there wasn't funding for that kind of study. You know, we're talking about 1994. This is 20 years ago.
That's, you know what? Maybe that this will be a new age where there can be some... We can read things on PubMed in the future to help spread the word, because even though people are a lot more open-minded now, it's still not commonplace yet. Are there any medical centers that you know of that are actively using energy healing?
No. I thought that once I wrote my book that the operating rooms would be flooded with healers, but it's really up to the patient. The patient has to have a healer and say to the surgeon, I want this person in the operating room with me. Most surgeons want their patients to be happy. And particularly at large academic teaching centers where the surgeon rules the operating room, he can bring in anybody he likes. So, but for some reason, patients are either not working with energy healers, or they don't know they could bring them into surgery. So it hasn't happened, to my great disappointment.
Well, I had a personal experience back in the 90s. In my first marriage, my mother-in-law had a triple bypass. Mm-hmm. And she had emphysema and all kinds of, they had to do a major work, and I'm not a medical professional, but I just finished energy work certification in healing touch. So mm-hmm. I was all excited. I'm like, I'm going in. And is it okay if I go in the recovery room? And it was a Catholic hospital, so I brought my rosary to kind of make it more acceptable to the nurses, hopefully, if they would let me in instead of bringing a pendulum to check the energy. And she wanted me to do it. And the nurses were very open-minded. They let me go right in. And you know, Julie, I was just a novice at the time. But I figured with the intention of healing and also just being a conduit, you know, that it would not do harm. And anyway, she said when she felt me, even though I never touched her, she could feel me and she was very conscious. And I know this works. And I'm hoping that this show will inspire all the energy healers out there to get your book and to get certified or get out there and work with their loved ones, at least, you know, and maybe they can open doors professionally with other MDs like Dr. Oz and surgeons that would be open to this kind of thing. Because could you imagine what the world would be if we had energy healers at all of the major hospitals?
It would make a huge difference in surgical outcomes. I began to see surgery as a platform for very deep healing, because what I didn't mention is what got me interested in prenatal life is I realized that's where people were going back to under surgery, under general anesthesia. Because under general anesthesia, somebody else breathes for you, and the only other time in your life that somebody else breathes for you are when you're in your mother's womb and she's breathing for you.
That's interesting. So did that lead you to want to create a program for doulas, because I know you certify them?
Not particularly for doulas. I mean, I didn't think of them as a particular population, but I have had doulas come and study with me.
Because I can imagine that someone who's trained with you as a doula can really assist in, you know, maybe a decreased trauma through the birthing process for them, both mother and the baby.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what would you like people to really know? Like, you know, you do this work, you teach, you write books, you're, you know, on the video, you've been interviewed by major media. But what are people not getting, Julie, that you really want them to know?
There are a couple of things. First of all, that there's meaning to everything. You don't just break a leg, you know. What were you thinking about that day? What was going on in your life? Why did the body choose that part to be injured? Why did you fall in just that way? That on a physical level, everything has meaning, everything can be investigated, and everything can be healed.
Well, that is such an important message, because so many times people believe they can't be healed.
And that somehow what happens to them is arbitrary. It just happened. You know, I just happened to get sick. I just happened to injure myself. I think that's the first thing. Then the other thing is the importance of emotions and of understanding what you're feeling moment to moment and understanding the power of emotions to heal. We need there's no such thing as a bad emotion. The only thing that feels bad is suppressing emotion. We tend to think of fear, anger, pain, and need as bad emotions. Those are the feelings we need in times of danger. We need fear to perceive danger. We need anger to protect ourselves from danger. We need pain to know how much we've been damaged. And we need to reach out and get others to help us. So these very emotions people want to get rid of are absolutely essential and life-preserving.
Well, and do you think that whole spiritual movement where they're, you know, the ego really... the disconnect from the ego, but fear is a function of the ego to protect us, or anger, or,
well,
you know.
I don't know what they mean by the ego. To me, there's just a self. Yourself, you are there, you are an embodied self. The self is in every cell in your body, and you need fear to perceive danger. I mean, yeah, I mean, the two emotions which we perceive are excitement and fear. Excitement is, oh, there's an antelope over there, I could eat it. Fear is, oh, there's a lion over there, it could eat me. You're going to need to respond differently in those two different situations. If you get rid of your fear, you'll just stand and let the lion come up and devour you.
Yeah, that's a good point. And what you really, your message is, you know, not to separate yourself, like to really embody everything and not disconnect.
Absolutely. And that is a huge challenge, because in order to survive our childhoods, where a lot of dangerous things were often happening, while we were being told that they were for our own good, we had to suppress these emotions. So the only way a child who is so expressive and shows everything can suppress an emotion is to disconnect, to dissociation, to dissociate. And so dissociation is the childhood survival mechanism, which doesn't serve us very well in later life.
Well, you know, you've given all of us some homework, Julie, and you are a true teacher, a master teacher at that. And do you have any upcoming workshops in case people are interested?
Well, the one I mentioned at the end of September is going to be for certification for working in surgery. I'm going to be doing one I haven't posted on the website yet at the end of October called the Anger Clinic. And this is for people who are always angry or people who never get angry, can't find their anger, and everybody in between. It's really going to be a workshop that explores the meaning of anger and teaches you how to both feel it and express it safely and creatively and life-preservingly.
I love that you're addressing both sides of it, because you always hear about anger management. This person is a rageaholic, but you never hear about all of those people that were taught it wasn't allowed to be angry as a child, you know.
And also, curiously, and this is a kind of subtle difference, what people are calling rage is not anger. Anger is the fierce desire to live. And to destroy anything that is keeping you from living. The rageaholics are actually in pain. They're not feeling anger at all. And they're trying to throw the pain out of their body into other people. They're not doing it to protect themselves. So rageaholics are usually in pain. They're usually not feeling anger at all, although the behavior looks angry.
Wow. You know, that probably unlocked so many people, just that statement. Because so many people get that confused. I know I did. You know, when I would see someone angry and it would be rage. And, you know, a lot of women turn the anger inward.
Yeah. And what you have to do is check in with their body. If you're feeling this vibration from their muscles, they're angry. If you're not feeling it, they're not angry, no matter how they're behaving. And they're usually in pain.
Julie, I think we could have talked for 3 hours and I still wouldn't have gotten through all of my questions for you. I just really honor the work that you do, and I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for sharing your life's work with us on this brief interview and giving us a little homework and information on how we can heal ourselves. So thank you so much.
You're a wonderful interviewer. I've enjoyed the questions very much.
Well, thank you, Julie. And if you guys want more information, please look at her website. She has some incredible workshops, and her information on her book is there at juliemotz.com, juliemotz.com. And her book is really fascinating. I read part of it, Julie, and it's all about her work with Dr. Oz and in the surgery room doing energy work. Hands of Life is the title. And thank you all for listening today. It's been such a pleasure sharing this time and energetic space of healing with you all. Namaste.
Thank you for tuning in this week to Reach For It Radio. Please join your host, Christina Winslow, live each Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, on BBS Radio. Listen live or listen later. Subscribe for free on iTunes or Stitcher. Or connect with us on reachforitradio.com.